You are tuned in to episode 8 of Sound Science and Dub Lab Radio with me, your host, Dr. Yuando Pierce. On this show, I talk about science and music with the help of those in the know while playing tunes. This month's episode, Good Vibrations with Endel, starts after this. Stay tuned. On today's show, I'll be talking about the bi-directional relationship between neuroscience and AI, and speaking with founder and CEO of the German tech company Endel, which uses machine learning to create personalized tracks meant to help people focus, relax, and sleep better by inputting factors such as heart rate, time of day, location, and even the weather. In 2017, Demis Hassabis and colleagues published a paper entitled Neuroscience-Inspired Artificial Intelligence. They argued that better understanding biological brains could play a vital role in building intelligent machines. Which of course makes sense, because the human brain is really the only existing proof that we have that such intelligence is even possible. Overall, the benefits to developing AI of closely examining biological intelligence are twofold. So first of all, neuroscience provides a rich source of inspiration for new types of algorithms and architectures. For example, where a new facet of biological computation found to be critical to supporting a cognitive function, then it could be considered an excellent candidate for incorporation into artificial systems. Secondly, neuroscience can provide validation of AI techniques that already exist. So if a known algorithm is subsequently found to be implemented in the brain, then this is strong support for its plausibility as an integral component of an overall general intelligence system. So the paper is super dense, but it is really interesting. If you do want to take a closer look at it, please get in touch and I will happily send it to you, but I've taken the liberty of summarizing it here. So as an overview, there are two fields that are pivotal for current AI research. These are deep learning and reinforcement learning, both of which took root in ideas from neuroscience. The paper goes into unpacking these two fields by looking backwards, but also forwards into the future. Deep learning, also known as neural network, is a machine learning method that was first used in the 1940s. This form of AI imitates the workings of the human brain in processing data and creating patterns for use in decision making. So not long after it was first developed, others proposed mechanisms by which networks of neurons might actually learn incrementally via supervisory feedback or efficiently encoding environmental statistics in an unsupervised fashion. In other words, the AI system was able to learn with assistance or just learn independently or somewhat independently based on incoming data. At the heart of artificial intelligence is learning. So the 80s was really about developing ways for AI to learn, in other words, become intelligent. And it was during the 80s that things got really interesting. So at the time, most AI research was based on serial computation, which was an approach inspired in part by the notion that human intelligence involves manipulation of symbolic representations. However, a growing foundation of knowledge about the brain seemed to point in a very different direction, highlighting the role of highly parallelized information processing. This was a complete game changer. Today, current network architectures replicate the hierarchical organization seen in the cortex of the mammalian brain, with both convergent and divergent information flow in successive nested processing layers. Alongside its important role in the development of deep learning, neuroscience was also instrumental in erecting a second pillar of contemporary AI, stimulating the emergence of the field of reinforcement learning. Reinforcement learning methods address the problem of how to maximize future reward by mapping states in the environment to actions and are among the most widely used tools in AI research. Believe it or not, this kind of AI was inspired by studying animal behavior in conditioning experiments to understand how they learn, so think of Pavlov's dog. Nowadays, it might not seem as obvious how neuroscience informs the powerhouse that is AI. But if you look closely, you'll see it there, propping up the foundations. Attention, episodic memory, working memory, and continual learning are four examples of behavioral principles in the brain that have been applied to AI. I'll put up a figure from the paper which shows the parallels between AI systems and neural models of behavior on the site, which is www.soundsciencepodcast.com, under show notes under episode 9. But for now, I'm just going to expand on one of these. Both biological and artificial agents need a capacity for continual learning. That is the ability to master new tasks without forgetting how to perform prior tasks. While animals appear relatively adept at continual learning, neural networks suffer from the problem of catastrophic forgetting. This occurs as the network parameters shift towards the optimal state for performing the second of the two consecutive tasks, overwriting the configuration that allowed them to perform the first. Given the importance of continual learning, this liability of neural networks remains a significant challenge for the development of AI. So what can the field of AI learn from neuroscience? So at the end of neurons are these small structures called dendrites, which make neurons look like tree branches in autumn time if you're looking at the neuron as a whole. If you look very closely, you'll see that these dendrites have small protrusions that connect via small gap junctions called synapses. Thanks to synapses, electrical impulses can be transferred from one neuron to the next. These connections are essential for learning and memory through a process called plasticity. Neuroimaging techniques are now so advanced that they allow for real-time visualization of the structure and function of dendritic spines during learning at the spatial scale of single synapses. This approach can be used to study synaptic plasticity in detail, and there is emerging evidence for special mechanisms that protect knowledge about previous tasks from interfering during learning of a new task via changes to dendritic spines and synapses. Together, these findings from neuroscience have inspired the development of AI algorithms that address the challenge of continual learning in deep networks by implementing a form of elastic weight consolidation, or EWC. I'm not going to lie, I'm almost losing myself here, so I'm not going to go into too much detail. I really don't know that much about AI, but I'm going to have a stab at it anyway. If you are an AI tech and I've got this completely wrong, then I'd love to hear from you. So please contact me at soundsciencepodcast@gmail.com. Would love to hear from you. So what I understand of elastic weight consolidation is that it's an algorithm that slows down learning in a subset of, they call them network weights, which I assume are units. So these network weights that have been identified as important to previous tasks are anchored to previously found solutions. And this allows multiple tasks to be learned without an increase in network capacity. So the AI system can gather information, process it, learn, come up with a solution, and then when it moves on to the next task or it's focused on something else, rather than forgetting what it's learned, so forgetting, humanizing it, but the equivalent of that, it has that information anchored somewhere. This means that the EWC algorithm can allow for deep reinforcement learning networks to support continual learning at a large scale. Does that sound convincing? I'm not sure. Disclaimer, I don't know. Google knows. But yeah, the take-home message is that a lot of the processes that are working in the brain are actually interesting templates for the development of AI systems. Demis Hassabis, author of the article, is also the CEO of DeepMind Technologies, a British artificial intelligence company founded in September 2010. Here is what Matthew Botvinnik had to say.
We see neuroscience as a useful guide in our search for solutions to AI, and also as providing methods for us to validate the ideas that we're coming up with in our AI research. The brain is arguably still the only example that we have of something that approximates the kind of intelligence we're trying to build. And so it seems like a good idea to pay some attention to how it works. At DeepMind, the way neuroscience informs AI research I think it works at several different levels. So there are cases where we're interested in very specific findings from neuroscience research, like memory replay, for example, or the way that dopamine works in the brain. Another tool that we use every day at DeepMind, which is something called reinforcement learning, which is about how you can learn to behave effectively given only rewards and punishments. That also came originally out of studies of animal learning and psychology. We look for opportunities to take what we've learned about those very specific aspects of neural function and then translate them into things that will work for AI. In my experience so far, I've realized that there's a subtler and maybe more important way in which neuroscience informs AI research, which is that when you have neuroscientists in the building interacting with engineers and computer scientists and experts in machine learning, you get a wider variety of intuitions and viewpoints and associations, which ends up paying off for AI research. The way I think about it is, back in the days when people were trying to build machines that could fly, they might have discovered the solution without worrying about how birds are able to fly. And in the end, the solution for machines ended up looking different from the solution that birds use. But at the same time, it seems like it would have been silly for people trying to solve flight to completely ignore birds. And that's, I think, what we would be doing in AI research if we didn't attend to neuroscience. It's there for us to learn from. It seems inevitable that it can provide guidance in our search for solutions to AI. And if we can do those two things in the same building with the same researchers working on it, I think we stand a better chance of succeeding.
But what about in the other direction? How does AI help us to better understand the brain or even impact the brain? Without looking at any of the science, it's clear that sounds and music does something to your brain, and we utilize this without much thought. Whether it's listening to white noise to focus, the sounds of the ocean to sleep, or wind chimes during meditation, we all have our own personal preferences. For me, I wrote my entire PhD thesis to the soundtrack of the computer games The Sims, for some reason. But there is actually mounting research linking sound and music to a number of health benefits, from boosting immune function and lowering stress levels to improving the health of premature babies and aiding memory in Alzheimer's and motor coordination in Parkinson's disease. In the 1950s, composer John Cage began to explore what would happen if some parts of a musical composition were left to chance. His efforts paved the way for a new genre of music called generative music, which largely removes the composer from the process and instead relies on systems based on rules to write music in real time. In 2018, Enzel saw the potential in both these ideas, creating something that couldn't have come at a better time given the explosion of wellness apps in the last few years. My interview with co-founder and CEO Oleg Stavitsky after this. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being my guest.
Yeah, I mean, thank you so much for having me. I'm a huge fan of Double Apps, but yeah, I was honored.
Oh, it's really nice to hear. Thank you. So Enzel is an app that generates reactive, personalized soundscapes to promote things like focus, relaxation, and sleep. And what's amazing about it is that it takes in data like your location, time, the weather, and even your heart rate to create ambient soundscapes that are created on the spot for your real-time needs. Would you say that that's an accurate description of what the app does?
Yes, absolutely. Except for maybe, you know, it's not just an app, but we've started with building an app, but actually Enzel is a technology. And that technology from day one has been envisioned to be integrated into, you know, cars and smart TVs and hotel rooms. And yeah, we will definitely go beyond the app.
That's incredible. I mean, for someone like myself who has always been drawn to soundscapes, I really like the concept. And I mean, it sounds like you've really taken that genre to another level, not by just creating these soundscapes, but moving it into the realm of generative music and making it personalized via machine learning. So the app launched in November last year. How did you come up with the idea for Enzel, and what's the journey been like?
Well, you know, I always wanted to to build something like that, to be honest, because I'm a huge Brian Eno fan, mm-hmm. or rather Brian Eno nerd. So yeah, I've been listening to his like music for airports and his street music and all the classic records, and it then struck me that, you know, like his ideas of self-evolving compositions, they kind of, you know, clash with the fact that you have to, you know, turn the record every 40 minutes or every 20 minutes. So I'm like, why don't we, I went to the team, to my team that I've been working with for 6 years, and I said, why don't we create this technology that procedurally generates this ambient soundscape? And at the time, we had been working on something else. We had been working on a kids apps brand. We've been building digital art for children. Wow. And those apps had, yeah, so they had a lot to do, those apps had a lot to do with the correlation of color and form and sound, basically synesthesia.
Oh,
so what we've been, yeah. So one of the apps actually allowed you to create, you know, music while drawing. So you would pick a color, you would create a drawing, and at the same time we would generate a musical composition depending on what, like, you know, the colors you choose, the forms you use, things like that. So I went to the team and we have reused some of the technology we have built, like some of the sound generation technology, and built a prototype. And at the time I met a Russian physicist who wrote a book called The Physics and Anatomy of Music, and I, you know, basically told him, hey, we're working on this technology that creates ambient soundscapes that helps you put in a state of flow. Which frequencies, scales, and tones do we have to use to kind of help people focus, mm-hmm. relax, and sleep? And the first thing he told me was, you know, it has to be personalized. There is no song or even like a static soundscape that will work for you in any, you know, situation. Like it has a lot to do with, you know, what time of the day it is, what weather it is, what your heart rate is, like the context of your day. So we started digging into the science behind that, and we landed on two scientific pillars. One being, you know, the science of the circadian rhythms, you know, that internal clock that regulates the phases through which you're going through the day. And because of that, we detect, you know, where you are, we detect your location. From there, we understand the weather and, you know, when sun rises and sets, where you are, the amount of light you're exposed to, and we adapt our soundscapes to that. And then there is obviously, you know, the neuroscience behind how certain frequencies, scales, and then tones can influence your cognitive state. So we're, yeah, as soon as we understand the phase, the circadian phase you're going through, we're supporting that with particular sounds and frequencies.
As a neuroscientist, I'm fascinated by the science around it. A lot of science that's conducted is within a clinical setting, but there seems to be, you know, a lot of data that's emerging for how, like you say, frequencies have an impact on the brain in wellness. So that's really cool to hear. Kind of on a similar level, have you heard of the company Subpac?
I have heard about them. Yeah, and in fact, we share the same investor, like +8 equity partners. They have invested in them and in us.
Oh, well. Cool. Okay, so that connects. They've created a tactile audio system that delivers deep bass frequencies to create an immersive physical and full body experience. So I was just wondering if you had plans to develop Endel in a way that utilizes the other senses in a similar way.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, you know, sound for us was always just the very first mm-hmm. step. We have started with sound simply because, you know, it's the easiest way for you to control your environment. Plus, you know, we're all sound and ambient music mm-hmm. geeks. So yeah, it was a very natural, yeah, starting point for us. But definitely the vision is to go beyond sound. The vision is, you know, you walk into your apartment or into a hotel room, and we know that you just had, you know, 10 meetings, you've been stuck in traffic, your heart rate is this, and we re-engineer the whole environment around you. We, you know, dim the lights, make them brighter, we change the temperature, we obviously create the soundscape. So we literally want to move from engineering sound environment to engineering environments, period.
That is fascinating. And I read a little bit about sort of how the technology that you've developed might be able to actually impact the quality of sleep, not just help you to get to sleep, which a lot of those traditional soundscapes in the genre do. Can you explain a little bit more about that and where you are in terms of the science of how that relates to your patterns during sleep, like REM versus non-REM, or your circadian rhythm?
Yeah, so I've been reading this book, you know, Why We Sleep, a very scary book. Yeah, and yeah, but very like eye-opening, I would say. And so we have a sleep mode inside the app, and in fact this is the most used mode inside the app. And so a lot of people use Endel to go to sleep, but then, you know, currently we're helping you go to sleep, and we're helping you, but it's not just about that. It's not just about, you know, going to sleep. It's about supporting various phases of your sleep, like deep sleep versus REM sleep. And for that, like, we currently do not have technology to precisely, you know, understand which phase of sleep are you going right now. So there's a couple of companies that are doing that right now, one of them being Sleep Score, for example, a company that has created this bedside device, which you put on your bedside and turn it on, and it sort of works as a radar, like detects your movement, and from that it measures, you know, the, and they understands which phase of sleep you're going through. So we're looking to work with them and with companies like them to, yeah, support you, because obviously, you know, sleep, it's not just the sleep that is important. It's very important for you to get both deep sleep and REM sleep. So for example, if we understand that you've got too much deep sleep but not enough REM sleep this night, we could help you with using specific frequencies and scales and sounds. We could help you make that transition and get that REM sleep.
That is absolutely fascinating. The question of why we sleep is an ongoing one, but a lot of research is emerging to better understand how sleep actually facilitates memory consolidation versus like pruning networks in the brain to create more room for storing memories. So I really like the idea that you're going into it on that level so deeply. I mean, the technology that you've created has so much potential and will obviously develop as more of the science is better understood. As a side to what you're doing, and the point of Endel, Warner Music have commissioned you to produce 20 albums across the next year, which is huge, so congratulations. When I read it, there's a lot of press about how it might pose a threat to real musicians, but it feels to me very clear that that's missing the point. Could you tell us just a little bit about that and sort of your thoughts on that narrative?
Yeah, thank you for saying that. And yeah, I hope it is clear now that, yeah, what we're going for is not even music. Like, the whole point is that we do not create music. We're not here to create music. We don't even call our output music. We call it functional sound environment. And the whole point, like the reason we're calling it this, is because it's not designed to be consciously listened to. It's designed to blend with the background. And the best compliment we can get is, you know, when people are saying, yeah, plug that in and I didn't even notice that it's there. That's precisely the point. That's what we're going for. Yeah, because it's not, again, it's not music. It's a soundscape that helps, that influences your cognitive state. That's what it is. It just happened to sound like. So, while with the technology that we have built, we've been going through TechStars Music Acceleration Program in Los Angeles. You know, one of the best acceleration programs for tech companies in the world. And while we've been going through that, Warner Music approached us and we said, hey, and they said, hey, we want to distribute your content, the content that your technology creates on all of those platforms. And we were like, Spotify, Apple Music, you name it. And we were a bit hesitant at first because it kind of contradicts the point of our soundscapes being personalized and adaptive and generated on the spot for you. But at the same time, we figured, why not? I mean, the technology allows us to do that. We figured, why don't we do that? So we literally had our sound engineer and the composer, Dmitry Yevgrafov. He literally sat there with the algorithm and emulated various states of the system, like the cloudy morning, focus, for example. And he had the algorithm, you know, generate those hour-long soundscapes. They could easily be, you know, 10-hour-long soundscapes, but he was like, okay, let's do it 1 hour. He exported them. Yeah, we have created cover artworks, cut them in individual tracks, and delivered them to Warner, and Warner is now rolling them out. We have 5 Sleep albums already published, with Relax and Focus albums coming.
Oh, cool. That's exciting. I think it's a good platform to understand what it can do, and yeah,
a lot of people ask us, like, are you here to, you know, create songs? We're like, no, that's yeah, exactly what we're not doing. We're not Drake and, you know, Sleep Sound. Like, I mean, it's all good. Like, we're not here to create singles that are gonna be, you know, played on the radio. That's not the point.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of, there are other companies that are trying to do that, though. We're just not them. We're not creating pop music or like any we're creating ambient soundscapes.
I mean, whenever there's developments in technology, the same in neuroscience, like I work on CRISPR gene editing, and it's very easy to jump to sort of how this can be used in a threatening way. And it kind of detracts from the focus of what can actually be something quite incredible. So that's really cool. So one of my final questions is about the fact that everyone is different, which Endel is cleverly capitalizing on. And you say it's just the beginning, and that this technology can be further adapted to make it more and more personalized in different ways and on different platforms. So what kind of tracks has Endel created for you, just out of curiosity?
Well, you know, I mean, they sound similar to what you will hear in the app when you will listen to that. It's about, it's more about, you know, what sounds, what types of sounds are we playing when, because it really has to do with the time of day, and it has to do with my circadian rhythms. So, and my circadian rhythms are actually different from yours. I mean, because it all relates to sex and age, actually. So because as we age, our circadian rhythms shift. So basically, we will implement, you know, the support for the age support, basically. So we will ask you for your birthday, and again, because we need to adapt to the changes in those cycles that happen with age. So yeah, like, for example, if we both, you know, start listening to Endel at the same time, and the weather would be identical, and all the other circumstances would be identical, and we'll be going to be in the same place, we will in the future hear slightly different sounds, simply because, you know, the sex difference and the age difference.
So you can't necessarily pick up on those specific differences, like, let's say my heart rate is higher and it's the morning for me, and I want to use Endel to create a soundscape that's going to energize me for the day, versus someone who might have high heart rate but it's, you know, in the evening, and actually it's because they've had a stressful day, they want to be more relaxed. Does Endel kind of account for those sorts of differences?
Oh yeah, absolutely, 100%. It does that now, but that we're doing right now. What I'm saying is, in the future, even if the circumstances are identical, simply, and you know, like, we're sitting in the same room, the weather is the same, the modes are the same, but simply because, you know, the age difference and, like, as I said, sex difference, like, the sounds will be slightly different just because of that, even if all the other circumstances are the same. So it's going to be very, very personalized to you. Yeah.
Wow. That's super cool. I can't wait to see how this develops. I downloaded the app. It's on my phone, so I can start using it. Thank you so much for being on the show this month. That was super interesting. And even as an aside, I can't wait to hear the next 15 albums, because, like, the ones that I did listen to, so far. I feel like it really did help me sleep.
Great, thank you so much. And thank you for having me. I mean, it was a real pleasure, sure.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
So that's a wrap, folks. Thank you, as always, for tuning into the show. For show notes, you can go to www.soundsciencepodcast.com, and you can also share the show or listen back on www.dublab.com, where you're tuned in now, under archives. It should be available in the next couple of days. Also, just in case you didn't know, The Show Exists is a podcast available on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. See you next month.